Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, a joint effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and the FAA Safety Team, the FAST Team. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Karen Dunbar, or KDD, FAST Team representative from Tampa, Florida, who is today's host.
Hello, this is Karen Dunbar for Managing Safety. Today we're talking with Rich Weber, who is the chief aircraft pilot at Webb Air Aviation. Interestingly, he's also a police officer who works flying helicopters for the Jacksonville Police Department. Good morning. How's it going today?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Tell us a little bit about your background in aviation so that we know what your experience is and what's required to hold the position that you have today.
Well, I've been a pilot since 1987. I started flying back in 87, obtaining airplane ratings, and been a police officer since 1985, and I've been with the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office since 1994. I was a police officer in Indianapolis prior to that. In 1998, then I was assigned to the aviation unit with the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, so I've been out there for 13 years with the Sheriff's Office aviation unit.
All right. You have a lot of hours, I assume, in a variety of different kinds of aircraft. So tell us a little bit about what kind of things you fly or have flown.
Well, I've got about 6,000 hours total time, and half of that's in turbine helicopters. That's where I started in the Sheriff's Aviation, was in the police helicopters, flying police helicopters on the night shift, and obtained a lot of experience that way. And the other half is with airplanes. We've got Bell 206 helicopters and a Bell 407, an OH-58, which is a military surplus that a lot of the law enforcement agencies are now using across the country, which really helps with the current economic situation. And as far as the airplanes, we've got a Piper Saratoga, a Piper Aerostar, and a King Air 200. So we've got a pretty good size unit. There's 10 of us police pilots as well that fill both the helicopter and the airplane, needs for the sheriff's office.
So, as the chief pilot for the aircraft that the police department has, are you the one who's deciding which craft goes out on which sort of mission?
Well, yeah, I'm the chief pilot of the airplanes, and we've got a unit commander that he makes the determination of what aircraft we use, and depending upon the distance that we're going to fly, as far as for the fugitive prisoner transport, then that determines which aircraft we use. And typically, the Piper Saratoga we use more locally within the state, flying back and forth either prisoners that are on extradition, or also we fly the state prisoners that are required to come back for court hearings, and so we transport them in that. We've got the Piper Aerostar, which is then a light twin, but much faster than Saratoga, that we would take for longer distance trips, and then we can also utilize the King Air when we have further trips and multiple pickups that really make it more efficient and cost-effective for the sheriff's office to get these people brought back to Jacksonville.
I noticed, looking through your background, that you used to fly the night shift with
Yes.
the police department. Talk a little bit about what kind of special challenges there are for night flying.
Night flying can be quite exciting. It's always very interesting and a lot of fun flying on the night shift. A lot of people like flying nights, of course. However, it just does have some things that need to be considered, such as fatigue. It's much more fatiguing flying at night, and when you're flying helicopters, that's more fatiguing just because they're inherently unstable versus an airplane, which is more inherently stable. So that can just be more fatiguing. And then when you're doing a law enforcement mission, you've got to fly the aircraft, and then you're also your tactical flight officer, or if it's another police pilot that's in that seat, then they've got jobs to do, but still there still can be quite a comprehensive task up there between the two that you're working together to complete the mission at hand, and it can be challenging as far as you just want to make sure that you're fit for duty when you come into work, so that way you can be safe and everybody get the job done and go home at night.
Did you find you had to modify your usual sleep schedule because you were working, you're flying at night?
Yes, of course. When you're flying at night, so then you're getting off in the early morning hours, then you get home, and So sometimes your sleep, it's more difficult for your body to adapt to the sleep habits and the patterns. And then you've sometimes, when you're sleeping during the day, you've got noises that maybe you don't have at night. People out mowing their grass, trash pickup, you know, just the car traffic and just much more noise, which then sometimes can inhibit your sleep. So you may not get as well of rested sleep if you don't, you know, try to make some changes to take care of that and accommodate that.
What do you think the primary thing that pilots can do to deal with that issue if they know they're going to be taking a night flight? What do you need to do to get yourself ready?
Well, they need to have sufficient sleep, which might mean even possibly taking a nap in the afternoon if they had to get up early to, whether if they're a police pilot and maybe they need to go to court, or if they have just other responsibilities and family obligations and don't sleep as long as they feel, or if they're just a little tired, you know, get a nap in before they go to work. That way they're more well rested and they're more alert and able to function as a police pilot on the night shift.
All right. I noticed that you also are an FAA safety team member, just like I am.
Yes.
If there was one safety message that you wanted to communicate to our listeners, what would that be?
How I feel about with safety, that there are many, whether you're a professional pilot, whether you're a private pilot with that you just fly, you know, for pleasure or as a hobby, it's very important to maintain your, not only your currency, but your proficiency. Sadly enough, there are some that they take it more for granted, their recurrency, and if they're an instrument-rated pilot, they may maintain that six-month currency, but they're not staying proficient. And what can happen is that, you know, they're going out, and even if they're going with a safety pilot or if they go out with a instrument instructor, and they are getting their currency in, and they might be, you know, flying under the hood in simulated instrument conditions, if they're not really training to stay proficient, they could end up being in a situation that could be, you know, quite catastrophic if they end up getting into some weather, because, you know, flying in instrument conditions versus just flying under the hood are two different things we're talking about. They're two different beasts, and what happens is they get into those instrument conditions, and they may even have their family on board, which, you know, they could have some family members or some friends. So now they even feel more pressure to perform, and they're just not up to the standards or to the skill level that maybe they once were, just because they haven't flown enough and trained enough. And then if they end up getting into maybe low IFR at their destination, some unforecasted weather conditions, and if they haven't had that training, that, you know, unfortunately, a lot of the statistics have shown they may end up getting, you know, spatially disoriented, and before you know it, then they're out of control with the aircraft, and then we've got some casualties. And so it's really important to make time to get out and train and get with an instrument instructor if you're an instrument pilot, and get that training that you need to, and get out in some actual weather. Don't just, you know, fly under the hood with a simulated instrument conditions, but get out there in some good, stable, you know, weather, and shoot some approaches. And if you can, if you don't feel comfortable shooting them down to, if the weather is low IFR, then be with someone who is, and that'll get your confidence up, your skill level back up, and make you a safer pilot.
It sounds like we're sort of moving into the whole issue of professionalism in the cockpit. Our administrator, our FAA administrator, Randy Babbitt, has chosen professionalism as the primary emphasis during his tenure at the FAA. How would you define professionalism in the cockpit, and what kind of advice can you offer to pilots about how we can make every pilot think of themselves as a professional pilot?
It's very important to think of yourself as a professional pilot, whether you're flying as a solo pilot or if you have another pilot on board, or if you're flying actually professionally as in an airplane or in a helicopter. You need to maintain responsibilities and duties that each person knows what their responsibilities and duties are, and then you need to stick to that. And if there is a situation that may arise, whether an incident or emergency, then you need to do your duties. If there's a disagreement, then, you know, there's going to be someone that's going to be a pilot in command that may be a senior person that has more experience or and or ratings, and what they need to do is they need to appreciate, understand, and respect that position, And you can't be fighting over the controls. You can't be arguing. You've got to stick to your job and do what's required to make it a safe outcome. If the pilot in command maybe becomes incapacitated or just panics and is stressed, then it may be a situation then where the non-flying pilot may have to take control. But you need to maintain professionalism. Remember what your job duties are. Do those. Don't try to do both, because that's why you have, the crew resource management is in fact to make each person stick to their duties, and it makes it more efficient flow and a safer outcome, and the job is the flight is handled the way it's supposed to.
A good briefing is really important if you have more than one pilot on board.
Absolutely.
So that everybody does know what their designated tasks are.
Absolutely. That's part of during the pre-flight. Then you're going to go over tasks and duties and responsibilities, so that way each know what they are supposed to be doing, and they can stick to that, and it's going to make for a good work environment if you do this on a day-to-day basis as well. And even if it's for someone that's just flying on the weekends, it's for a hobby or pleasure, then they still have this professionalism. They have these guidelines, if you will, and points that they're going to go by, and they can even brief their other passengers who may be non-pilots, but they can still help out with some duties, with charts and frequencies and those kind of things, but then they'll understand what is needed of them to help out.
I agree. We had an incident not too long ago in Florida where a pilot became incapacitated, but because he had briefed his passenger and because he called out everything as he did it in the aircraft, the passenger actually was able to land the aircraft without the assistance of the pilot, with some help from ATC, but he understood what was where in the aircraft because he had been briefed.
Right, that's where the briefing is really important and critical, and that can make for a good outcome just like that, and that's what we're looking for. That's our goal, is to be able to make every flight a safe flight, and there's things going to happen. Equipment can fail because it's equipment, but that's what we train for and educate ourselves and our other passengers and persons up flying with us, so that way then everybody has an idea of what to expect, what can happen, and if they have these expectations and understanding, they won't panic, and they'll be able to, like in this example that you gave, be able to successfully bring the aircraft back home.
Mm-hmm. All right, I do want to talk a little bit about how police work in the air interacts with general aviation. For the most part, I think your scheduled carriers and your commercial pilots are not going to be trying to come into the area sightseeing where you might have an active air investigation going on, but general aviation is probably the area where people might go, well, what's going on with all the helicopters over there? And they might be tempted to come and see what's going on. So what kind of advice can you give to general aviation pilots about areas where there is an active police investigation or even a lot of news helicopters around?
I agree, Karen. There are times that either general aviation pilots may be interested and curious to see what's going on down below, and they want to kind of get an eye on that. And what they need to remember is that the police pilots and even the news gathering people, they're doing a job, and they have a professionalism amongst them to where the news pilots know they need to stay out of the way for the law enforcement, because they're have a critical mission here, and their role is to assist the ground units with whatever type of emergency or situation may be on the ground. And the general aviation pilots, if they can, maintain their distance that they need to, the required altitude, they're not going to be as low in an airplane as the helicopters are working the scene, and they can try to maintain radio communications. If it's in a controlled area where there's a control tower in effect, then that's just them monitoring and going by the direction of the air traffic controllers. If it's in a non-controlled area, then they should be on the same frequency as all the other aircraft in the area, and that way then everybody can communicate. The general aviation can keep their required altitude. They'll stay out of the way. They won't be a factor to where then that's not another distraction that the police pilots or even the news gathering pilots have to worry about. Having a collision with some aircraft that really have no involvement in the call, but they're just want to see what's going on, and that's something that's understandable why they do, but they really need to keep their distance and their altitude and just let those guys do their job, and in that way, that's once again another safe outcome.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot safer to watch it on the 6 o'clock news than it is to try and fly into an area where activity like that's going on.
Absolutely, and if that's something that they don't do on a daily basis, then they may not have the proficiency to fly, look outside, watch what's going on, and it's typically then they, you know, the typical circling around your home after you get your private pilot license, and you spiral right on down into the house because you're not maintaining your altitude and you're not having a division of attention between both flying the aircraft and watching what's going on down below. And that's why, as we as police pilots and even the news pilots, each have a job. The pilot flies, and then the tactical flight officer or the other police pilot, they're handling the communications with the ground units. They're doing all the eyesight that needs to be done down there, whereas the pilot, then he maintains what he needs to do is flying the aircraft. And when you have possibly a general aviation pilot that's trying to do both, that's not real proficient doing that, then they're trying to watch and they're banking and turning around, and then they end up descending down into the other aircraft or possibly to the ground, if worst case scenario.
So it sounds like the bottom line there is to plan the flight and fly the plan.
Yes.
If you didn't plan to be in this group of other aircraft in the air, you shouldn't go there.
Absolutely.
All right. Now, you did talk a little bit earlier about flying some transport flights for fugitives or people who are being returned to the state of Florida for their hearings or court dates or whatever. So I'm kind of curious personally, are there safety issues that you have to deal with in transporting prisoners that you wouldn't normally think about?
Absolutely. That's why we're police pilots assigned to the aviation unit, because as you're a police officer then and you've worked the street, you have prior police experience working the street, dealing with persons and prisoners and suspects and persons that mean others harm, then you already have the training to be safety conscious as far as relating to prisoners. So then you've got this background as a police officer that you know how to handle suspects, prisoners, but then you also have the aviation side to where then you can, you know, make the job happen. Mm-hmm. So it's important that we have measures that we go through as far as the restraints that we put on the prisoners and how they are, you know, we maintain, you know, the distance within the cabin of the airplane, and they stay in their seats. They're not moving around, and they're not getting up, and they're searched, you know, prior to putting them onto the airplane, and any baggage they may have that comes from the jail where we pick them up, that goes back locked in the baggage compartment, and that way then you maintain some security where they don't have access to anything that they could possibly try to get their restraints removed or any type of weapons that they could get, and that way then we've got some security, we've got some safety once again, and that way we can return them back, you know, safely back to where that way they can, of course, appear in court and stand trial for the crimes that they've committed.
Okay, so do you get any noise distractions when transporting these types of people?
No, fortunately, there's several, you know, there's a lot of police agencies that transport prisoners, and I think that with having police officers that are in charge of the flight, then you've got that security maintained, and that way then that doesn't give them the opportunity to try to do things that maybe are not in the best interest of the flight.
They may also understand it's their safety at issue too.
And it's their safety at issue too. They don't, you know, they in fact want to get back home, and they want to get on the ground. And so, you know, I think that's a big part of what they think too, is everybody wants to go home. They may not want to go back to, you know, be taken back to stand trial and to go to jail, but they also still want to keep breathing and, you know, maintain, you know, stay alive. So.
All right. In your many years of flying and the variety of aircraft and the variety of types of missions that you've flown, I know you've run into some emergencies in the air or some safety considerations that people with a lot less time might not be aware of. Can you give us some background from your experience?
Yes, it's quite ironic that you asked that, because I had been assigned to the aviation unit and began flying helicopters, However, I had been flying for over 10 years as a pilot, and I had taken one of my required solo cross-country flights at night in the helicopter, and living out on the East Coast here near the ocean, departed from this cross-country destination, climbing out, turned towards the ocean, lost all visual references, because as you know, as a pilot, then you don't, you know, even if you have a starlit night, it's still going to be dark. You're not going to have the visual references to be able to maintain your situational awareness. And you know, if you don't have any type of training, this is where it goes back to training. I was already an instrument pilot and a flight instructor, so I'd had the instrument training. Even though it was in an airplane, I was able to apply those instrument skills to flying this helicopter, and got on the instruments, maintained, you know, my aircraft control, continued to circle around back towards to the west, where there was the lights of the city, and maintained the control, and then it was uneventful. However, I've had people have told me that sometimes it's not quite so lucky, and it really caused them to panic, and that can be a pretty terrifying event for someone if they don't have the training. And that's why it's so important then to maintain training. And if you haven't, maybe if somebody's a pilot and they don't have the instrument rating, how important it is to get the instrument rating. You know, make yourself take the time. And sometimes there's other factors that, you know, economics and just having the money to do it and the time to do it, and, you know, with other responsibilities and obligations. But if you're going to be out there flying, then try to prepare yourself so that way then you can get back home. And it can happen to anybody, so don't think that it can't happen to you. It can happen to anyone. Here, I've been flying for 10 years, and it's one thing when you're an instrument pilot and you take off and you launch into the weather, you're expecting that. But there's times that you take off like this, you know, it's a starlit night. Had no idea that could happen, or, you know, wasn't anticipating going into any weather because there's no weather to go into. However, darkness can be just the same as going in, you know, launching into the clouds, and that's what happens. So then when you're not expecting it, then it can be exhilarating, and that's when you have to really just revert back to your training, get on those instruments, and maintain control of the aircraft.
That's a great tip for pilots. I do think more training makes you safer. Even if you're not planning to deliberately go and fly in weather, having that instrument experience could get you out of some sticky situations.
It sure can. Not enough can be said about training and preparing and being prepared. Even though you may not think you're going to need it, I've heard other instruments pilots tell me, well, you know, I don't ever go unless it's, you know, marginal weather. I don't go fly if it's going to be low IFR. Well, that's okay to plan that, and it's very important for, you know, pre-flight planning. But the weather can change, and you don't want to get yourself backed into a corner then where you're not able to be able to handle the situation and get it, you, yourself, and anyone with you home safely.
Rich, thank you so much for meeting with us today. This has really been fascinating information about some aspects of aviation that I think most pilots really don't get to experience and don't really think about. Is there anything you want to say to kind of wrap up your information that you're providing on safety?
Well, I just, once again, I'd like to stress, if you know, for all pilots out there that are instrument pilots or not instrument pilots, just any pilots in general, keep getting that training out there, get the refresher training, the recurrency training, go out and, you know, if you're an instrument pilot, fly in some instrument conditions. If you haven't done it recently, you know, if you fly in low IFR, if you're comfortable with, you know, someone that is, don't take those chances. Don't go out and push the limits, you know, but maintain that currency, that proficiency, become a safer, more educated, skilled pilot, and you're going to feel better about your flying and more comfortable if you encounter some type of unexpected condition, weather conditions or equipment, you know, malfunctions or failures. That way you're ready for it, you're confident, you're trained, and it's going to be an unevent for it that way.
Thank you so much again for being with us today. We've been talking with Rich Weber, who is the chief pilot for Webb Air Aviation and a law enforcement pilot as well. This is Karen Dunbar for Managing Safety. Thank you for listening.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, a joint effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and the FAA Safety Team. Please visit our studio website at faaproductionstudios.com to hear past programs.